On Christmas morning, the recently dedicated synagogue in Cologne, Germany, was smeared with swastikas. This act quickly set in motion a veritable chain reaction of similar desecrations all over Germany. Monuments to the memory of the victims of the Second World War, stores, walls, park benches, churches were daubed with anti-Jewish slogans, "Down with the Jews," "Juden raus," "Heil Hitler." What happened in Cologne was clearly not an isolated act of vandalism, nor the undirected work of some hoodlum. It was the kind of organized demonstrative action for which the Nazis not so long ago were notorious. This was how they began their shameful career. This was how they carried on their campaign of infamy. This is how they finally rode into power and engulfed Germany and the whole world in a ghastly global war. Now, these recent acts cannot as yet be said to point to a threatening, large-scale, early neo-Nazi revival in Germany. But on the other hand, they cannot be brushed aside as trivial and as unworthy of very serious notice. They have not been so regarded by the responsible leaders of the present German government. These were shocked and greatly aroused. The President of the German Republic, Dr. Heinrich Liebke, in his New Year's broadcast to the German people, stated that one becomes deeply afraid because of such brutalization. He said, "I do not want to do the German people an injustice by generalizing about such revolting manifestations, but it does seem to me to be necessary that each one of us should be ready with greater vigilance to prevent such hideousness which insults defenseless people and dirties the German name." And the former president of the German Republic, Dr. Theodor Heuss, reminded the German people that the events which took place indicated that they have yet to master their past. And the bold government of Chancellor Adenauer issued an official statement saying that the federal government and the whole German people have followed with greatest indignation reports about the desecration of Jewish places of worship and of the smearing of public and private buildings with emblems and slogans of National Socialism. There are signs that these actions in various parts of the country are part of a concerted plan to defame the Federal Republic in the eyes of the world public. The German police authorities are conducting extensive inquiries to identify the wire pullers behind the acts. And police authorities will do everything they can to bring the guilty people to justice, to prevent the repetition of incidents of this kind. Not only have the responsible representatives of the German government been aroused and shocked by what happened, but the rest of the world has not ignored what took place. The reaction in the whole free world has been swift, as if the free world has become suddenly greatly alarmed. Evidently, the free world recalled that it once did ignore these early manifestations and ultimately paid a frightful price for ignoring them. The free world once stood by and witnessed the political exploitation of anti-Semitism and the cunning technique of fanning race hatred and using it as rungs upon which to climb into power. And the free world did nothing, or next to nothing, about it. It discounted it all. It was too busy with other things. Anti-Semitism, they beguiled themselves into believing, was a purely Jewish problem. Only Jews should really worry about it. But in fact, anti-Semitism proved to be the most effective key which the Nazis had to gain power. And it was that key which unlocked the gates and opened the road for their attempted domination of the whole world. And when that was done, many, many peoples, beside the Jews, paid a frightful price. The free world is concerned of what has been happening in Germany, not only because of their repercussions in their own countries, among their own unsavory elements. For each country has its full share of these unsavory elements. Not alone of the emotionally unstable and disturbed people, the neurotics and the cranks and the crackpots, who are quickly moved to copy all publicized acts of outrage and crime, but the others, the former Nazis, or the Nazi-minded individuals, hate-ridden and race-conscious, bigots everywhere, who welcome every opportunity to have their doctrines and their slogans break again into public print, hoping that their day may soon come. The incidents which took place in Germany quickly leaped over the German border and, as if by prearrangement, identical incidents occurred in the neighboring countries, Belgium, Norway, Italy, and France, England, also in Canada, in our own country. But the concern is not only for the what might be called the passing repercussions of these events in the free world. The stirring up of these cells of the soul ravaged and the mind distorted and the hate-filled individuals which you find everywhere on the globe. But the free world is concerned about the soundness of its present political attitude towards Germany in view of what might turn out to be a revival of Nazism, whether by that name or any other name, in that country. Is it wise to rearm Germany, to strengthen its military position, to give it nuclear weapons, and to press for its unification in the light of what might be the beginning of a renewal of militaristic German nationalism modeled after former Nazism? Is the free world unwarily preparing the way for another Hitler? Did the Nazi defeat in the Second World War really end the threat of Nazism in Germany? Please remember that Nazism was never defeated by the German people. It was never repudiated by the German people. They never rose against it as a people. Nazism was defeated on the battlefield. Is the poison of race hatred and the hunger for world domination entirely out of the system of the German people? Will they be unwilling when they finally feel themselves ready and rearmed thanks to us and thanks to the free world? And when conditions are propitious, will they be unwilling to make another try for it and German political anti-Semitism, which, remember, was not a Hitler product at all. He only used it effectively and cunningly, mortally. Is German political anti-Semitism, which originated long before Hitler, in German circles, among German scholars and writers, and was part of the platform of German political parties decades before Hitler? Is that gone, done away with in Germany? Nazism at the moment, or neo-Nazism, may be no larger than a molehill. But as one British Member of Parliament remarked the other day, the last time that molehill became a mountain so big that it took the combined strength of Britain, the United States, and the Soviet Union to level it. Some of us have maintained right along that the rearming of Germany was a mistake. The German people, cannot be trusted with arms. They've given evidence that they cannot be trusted. Back in 1951, I addressed this congregation on the subject, shall we rearm Germany? And I stated at the time, and others shared the conviction, unfortunately not enough, here or elsewhere in the world, that the rearming of Germany means putting militarism in the saddle again in Germany and aggressive nationalism. It means weakening still further whatever democratic forces and sentiment that still remain in that country. It means the blossoming anew of a neo-Nazism. It means the prelude to a Third World War. The decision at Potsdam, which was taken by Truman and Churchill and Stalin, was a wise decision. It was dictated by real statesmanship. Germany should never be rearmed, they said. It should be permanently demilitarized. Like Switzerland, it should be neutralized. The North Atlantic Pact nations and the Soviet bloc of nations should agree to neutralize Germany. The armies of the Allies and of the Soviet Union should be withdrawn from Germany. East and West Germany should be permitted to reunite. The present division is unnatural, like the 38th parallel in Korea. If it is permitted to remain, it will be a source of never-ending conflict and political disturbance in the heart of Europe. A united and militarized Germany will be a menace to the world. A united and demilitarized Germany may be the way of pacifying the whole continent of Europe. The German people will then have the opportunity to rebuild their life, if they so desire, on truly democratic lines and in peaceful ways. This was 9 years ago, I believe today. That the rearming of Germany by our country and by the other free nations of the world will prove to have been as grave a mistake as Munich turned out to be. Germany should have been helped, of course, in every material way to rebuild its economy, help it to regain economic stability, as we helped other peoples. It should not have been helped militarily. But this is now water over the dam. We are building Germany up as one of the key military positions in Europe, hoping that it will be a key military position for us, for the free world. My own belief is that when the hour of decision arrives, if and when it does arrive, Germany will decide for herself when it wants to fight and whom it wants to fight, and her decision may not at all be to the liking of the free world. And so the free world is greatly concerned today. The free world is now watching very closely to see how the German government and the German people will meet the situation which has arisen. Will it temporize again, as was done by the Weimar government in the early days of the Nazis, in the early days of their propaganda and agitation, and by so doing destroyed itself? Will the present government really crack down on all the incipient Nazi-tainted rightist parties and outlaw their propaganda and suppress them? Will it really purge government officers, former Nazis and Nazi officers? And will it above all carry on an active educational campaign, an active educational program in its schools among its youth and the rising generation, really informing them of the horrors and the crimes of the Third Reich, and making them sharply aware of the evils and the dangers of race prejudice, and really teach them a nobler national destiny, which is not bound up with conquest and dreams of Deutschland über alles. And this must be done, in my judgment, promptly, and for the sake of a free and democratic Germany. For we wish a free and democratic Germany well. Because this period of economic prosperity which Germany is at present enjoying may not last forever. It doesn't with any country. A period of recession may set in, which feeds political restlessness and encourages these dark agitators, or a change in the political status of West Germany may come about as a result of summit negotiations of the East and the West. And when these come about, they may add fuel again to that fatal political romanticism to which the German people, unfortunately, are so addicted. The world will watch whether the labors of these fine men who are at present at the head of West Germany will succeed, whether they will be thwarted again. So cause not only the destruction of the present government, and the possibility is not to be disregarded, and bring dark powers back again to plague the country and the world. The Soviet Union has denounced these anti-Semitic outbreaks in West Germany, but in a way I get the impression that it is the pot calling the kettle black. There have been repeated outbreaks of anti-Semitism in the Soviet Union in recent years, which the government has done little to stamp out. And acts of discrimination against Jews in government posts, and sharp restriction of Jewish religious and cultural activities on the part of the government have taken place. When Mr. Khrushchev was in the United States recently and he was asked, when he addressed the press club in Washington about these anti-Jewish incidents and manifestations in the Soviet Union, he replied, and in so doing he begged the question, he replied that many Jews had a hand in the designing and in the launching of the Lunik and of the Sputnik. Many Jewish scientists. Which is of course true. But the charges of anti-Semitic discrimination or anti-Jewish discrimination, because anti-Semitism is officially outlawed in Russia, which were itemized and submitted by responsible Jewish bodies outside of the Soviet Union to the Soviet government. These are also true. The more recent Russian efforts to cater to NASA and to win over the Arab world have led to a violent anti-Zionist and anti-Jewish campaign in the Russian-controlled press and in the radio. I quote from the Jewish Telegraphic Agency of a few days ago, in a broadcast running the complete anti-Semitic gamut, reminiscent of the canards and the protocols of the Elders of Zion and Nazi propaganda, the Soviet Union this week voiced a sweeping attack against Israel, linking Israel with Jewish international bankers, Wall Street, and imperialism. And the broadcast originated in Moscow, was in Arabic, and was beamed to the Near East. The broadcast charged that Zionism was the instrument of Anglo-American capitalists for the penetration of the Near East. According to Radio Moscow, Israel is menacing the Near East peace with a policy of aggression because it is controlled by the new Israeli capitalism, which has been established during the last 12 years. Israeli capitalism was described as the agency of the imperialist of the West, who established ties with Zionism as early as the 19th century, and so forth. And so on. This was not an isolated broadcast. This has been going on in the Soviet Union for some time. Old Tsarism used Jew hatred and pogroms to suppress liberalism in Russia and to maintain its hold upon the ignorant masses. The modern Soviet state is not beyond slandering and maligning the state of Israel, whose establishment Russia favored 12 years ago, and in slandering an historic national movement which brought the state into existence in order to advance its own political interests in that part of the world. The Soviet Union has not solved the Jewish problem at home, and it is aggravating it by its conscienceless propaganda against Israel and by inciting the Arab world against Israel at a time when wise and intelligent statesmanship to try to find ways to pacify the Near East, to bring about an understanding between Israel and its neighbors. As far as Israel itself is concerned, the last year has been one of growth and progress. A national election was held in November, which reflected the nation's mood of confidence. The government in office was returned to power by a vote substantially larger than 5 years ago. With growing economic strength, there is coming also increased political stability. But the relationship with the Arab world has not improved. Blockade and boycott against Jewish trade and commerce continued. Certain foreign companies have been pressured by the Arab League to break off their business connections with Israel. And Israeli shipping, and generally all ships carrying Israeli cargo, are still barred from the Suez Canal. Recently, a Greek freighter carrying Israeli made cement from Haifa to French Somaliland was stopped at Port Said by the Egyptian government. And all this in the face of clear instructions from the United Nations requesting Egypt to end all restrictions affecting Israeli shipping. 2 years ago, Egypt agreed at the urging of the United Nations, Mr. Hammarskjöld, agreed to a resolution of the Security Council that there was to be no discrimination regarding the use of the canal. And interestingly enough, in spite of this brazen flaunting of the international community, international law, our World Bank voted a loan of some $56 million unconditionally to the Egyptian government to improve the Suez Canal. And the explanation which was given by our government was that the World Bank is an economic rather than a political minimum, an economic rather than a political medium. A rather lame explanation, and not a very convincing one in view of the past record of loans made or withheld by the World Bank precisely on political grounds. I recall that in 1957, during the Sinai campaign, when President Eisenhower was urging the government of Israel to withdraw from Sinai after its very amazingly successful campaign against Nasser, President Eisenhower stated in a televised broadcast to the American people, "We should not assume," he said, "that if Israel withdraws, Egypt will prevent Israel shipping from using the Suez Canal or the Gulf of Aqaba. If, unhappily, Egypt does hereafter violate the armistice agreement or other international obligations, then this should be dealt with firmly by the Society of Nations." Well, there's yet been no firm action by the Society of Nations or by the United States. Well, I've spoken to you this morning about the Jewish situation in Germany, in the Soviet Union, in Israel. I've drawn your attention to the persistent problems which confront us. I was asked the other day, why are the nations trying so hard to get to the moon? What do they hope to find there? And jocularly, I told them that perhaps the first thing they will find on the moon would be the Jewish problem. There were some of us who thought that with the end of the Second World War and with the defeat of the Nazis, that we can afford to relax, that anti-Semitism is done with, and the New Age free from all forms of prejudice and intolerance and bigotry had dawned upon the world. And many Jews did relax. There is no occasion for relaxation, my dear friends, now or in the days to come. The world had not entered its millennium. The kingdom of universal righteousness and peace, brotherhood, is not yet here, and for a long time will not be here. What these incidents mean to us, if we have intelligence to interpret them, is a challenge to be on the alert, not to relax, to carry on the good fight, not merely for the sake of the Jew, but for the sake of the world, of the free world, for our destiny is linked up with the destiny of freedom and democracy in the world. It is not enough to be disturbed. It is certainly no call to be frightened. It is an occasion to take stock of our spiritual resources, of our capacity to organize and to fight back. It is an occasion to summon ourselves to spiritual and political mobilization. These are clouds that pass over, but they are dark clouds and threatening clouds. The future for mankind, I am persuaded, will be bright. But we will have to make that future and ensure it by our efforts, by our dedication, by our struggle for what is right and just.